Broadcasting live from WPRK, Winter Park, Florida. The best in basement radio. All right. Dr. Benjamin Balick and Felix Balick are here.
Hello. Mm-hmm.
And my name is Jesse Velez. And, well, we got an hour today, of course.
Right. It's a game.
Yeah, it's a game.
Everybody's off the hook.
Nah, it's okay.
You know, I'm a terrible alumni because I don't know the name of the team or who they're playing or what
it's,
they're doing.
They're
all
Sailors, right?
Is it?
I think so.
He makes fun of me with all these sort of, you know, we have the logos with the kind of the sailor kind
of thing with
the tars and all the kind of the nautical theme that's part of the history.
Like
of
and every intersection where you can cross the street with like the pedestrians.
Right.
There's the little signs that say stop for sailors.
Yeah, you know, in the 70s, they would have carried a different connotation, but let's not go there.
What's that? What's
never, that? Never mind. It's an inside joke.
The sailor boys and such? Did that stop in the 70s?
Anyway, so a lot has happened this week. That were you able to check out the...
I was doing my best to actually...
Stay away from the
away
politics.
From it. I completed, you know. Yeah, and again, I mean, honestly, really, at least... I don't know. The we did once. We had a request, and we thank the listener for it. But and then we discussed the Democratic debate, which had, you know, an interesting dynamic with Sanders coming in from the...
Well, you know, I haven't been paying much attention to the Democratic debate because, you know, who knows how that's going to end up. But the Republican debate this week was kind of like, I would summarize it as trailer trash Game of Thrones. If they were going to do a South Park version, it would be trailer trash Game of Thrones.
Right.
They already did do a Game of Thrones.
Well, actually, South Park dealt with election politics a couple of times rather effectively. Even one of my students in which class was it? Oh, of course, it must have been the propaganda class because one of the optional assignments is to create your own. And somebody did actually play or make a play on that episode. Old episode, was it 2008-ish? Or
probably
that season about, you know, vote. You must vote, right? And one of the kids is kind of starts asking why, what for, what's the point? And then I think it's Puff Daddy that's kind of like hunting him down weirdly about it. Right, because everybody was into the Rock the Vote MTV.
Right. That was the Clinton years.
Well, yeah. No, I think it was 2000. Well, I mean, it was really big on the 2008. And
what is Rock the Vote?
Oh, it was.
Well, it was the MTV thing.
It's cool to vote.
Where they actually MTV was brand new. It was kind of like the latest fad back then. And
that's
in the 80s.
Mid 80s.
Mid 80s.
Right. They did
so they started rallying people to vote once it got commercialized and stuff. And it just carried on all the way through the. It was at the end of the Clinton years, I think it was, and then it just kept on going, you know, but. It never really amounts to too much. At least in California, it doesn't amount to too much.
No, I mean, I think there was, actually, I do recall that it was a big success in the Obama victory in 2008, the landslide victory. And again, we've talked about it before. We can go there, but the ample and constantly, slowly but truly mounting evidence of the of a lot of electoral fraud perpetrated by the Republicans and non-regular listeners will... Well, no, that I will turn around and employ the principle of equal opportunity hate in a minute. But in the case of electoral fraud, quite frankly, the Republicans do deserve to have it thrown in their faces.
Right, right.
Well, to be fair, it is extremely easy for them.
It's not that easy. You got
our system is
give the
so
evil emperor,
stupid.
AKA Karl Rove, making
no. I mean the electoral college.
Family Guy.
Well, the electoral college system is really bad.
Okay, in that sense, right. It's extremely baroque in the artistic, in the sense of the mixed up, impossible to trace.
Especially today. I mean, like.
Right.
Of course, nobody's going to change it because they're counting on it to predict their, like.
Yeah.
Chances,
but you know, I just find it interesting how they're disintegrating within their own party. I mean, I watched them. I mean, I actually tortured myself and then just started laughing at it. But Ted Cruz and Mark Rubio.
Funny,
I didn't know that Ted Cruz was actually descended from a Cuban background.
No, yeah.
And so is Mark Rubio. And what I found interesting is that
it's
they
his
both
claim for not being a racist, right?
What I find interesting is that they both have problems with immigration.
Of course they do.
Well, the party, remember that the issue of the Republican Party being in a long-term kind of chronic bind, politically speaking, and I'm fully playing the kind of the, you know, in a minute maybe we will mention how, you know, it's true that it's irrelevant to vote, and especially presidential elections, and sure. Everybody immediately kind of perks up and gives me plenty of hate, but that's okay. About it.
You love it.
I mean, it breaks my heart to see how there's, you know, despite the defense of the Constitution and the historical traditions and everything, we have about as much as democracy as the Soviets had in the 70s today. Mm-hmm. A better standard of living still, no doubt, but sure. Quickly, by the way, dropping, something that people are still having a hard time wrapping their mind around. We don't realize just how bad things are and how worse they're going to get if we don't respond rationally and try and fix our problems, which we can, but we're not. Yeah, so
that'll be the day.
But of course, that is the test. That is the ultimate test of any civilization in history, right? I mean, can you when things change and the formulas don't work anymore, how do you retool, adjust, and adapt?
The answer is almost always you don't.
You don't, and the inevitable consequence of not adapting
is collapse
and extinction, not as a human race perhaps, but as a distinguishable kind of civilization. Yeah.
Have you given any thought about the coincidence that all of a sudden there was a shooting in San Bernardino this very same day, the Republican debate?
That was the one at the...
in California.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. You know, my view on this is that all these things from 9/11 and before and forever, right? I mean, I don't think FDR engineered Pearl Harbor. I don't think George Bush engineered 9/11. But did they allow it to happen almost with glee even, hoping for a long time that something like it will happen? Yes. That is a fact, by the way. That's not even debatable, frankly.
Well, what I find it hard is that they found out it was a hoax when they call in the a threat for the schools, and they haven't found the source. So I don't know. It's just very very odd to me that.
In all honesty, I think it's kind of funny coming from the point of view of someone of my generation. All the like the big terrorist attacks and like the school shootings and stuff seem to affect like. Older people a lot more than us, because for us, like,
what's that mortality
school
thing?
School shootings are just a fact of life, you know? It happens often, and there's nothing we can do about it. But you guys didn't have school shootings when you were growing up, or if you did, they were extraordinarily rare.
We had them. We had them. You know, it's a different kind of violence back then. You know, so
more traditional, if you will.
Traditional,
violence for, you know, for revenge, for love, for
these days it's just crazy
for property.
Right. Well, these days it's more glamorized, is what it is. You know, whatever they can get themselves, you know, posted on Facebook. Oh, I was a terrorist. You know, or I did this, and I find that very alarming. That you know, our society is moving towards me. Look.
Moving
you know.
Towards.
No, I think we're well in there already.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that attracts people, and again, and we have to understand that they attract people to these religious fundamentalists, be they in the Middle East, you know, be they Muslim, be they Shi'i, Sunni,
be they
Christian,
Baptist.
Jewish, or anything at all. And I like to point out that there's plenty of those of all kinds and flavors.
I found out that William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy are Jewish.
Both of them.
Yeah, both of them.
I'm telling you.
There
we're
you go.
Everywhere. We're
everywhere.
We're everywhere. Don't you know? Of course, I like to make these anti-Semitic jokes. One, I can, right? Because I'm Jewish. But also to remind people just how... it's an exception all of a sudden. Right? In America, you know, being anti-Semitic against Jews is really unacceptable in any kind of polite society. I mean, you have to really... I have yet... You know, you have to really dig deep,
right, essentially,
to find the group. Or maybe, I don't know, I sought out very, shall we say, authentic demographics when I lived in the Deep South because I was interested. And I'm always interested in what the locals have to say, you know, when we're not being observed. Right?
Sure, sure.
Because it's more interesting, really. It's not because I'm not looking down or up
or
anything.
Right.
Just tell me something I've never heard before is always kind of a bit better, right? More interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But so I remember seeing the whole like you know white supremacy racism and just how it's not barely under the surface. It's like really you don't even have to scratch. You have to do a quick like you know, get some of the dust off and you're back on the plantation. So, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. So using the N-word on a very regular basis, so long as nobody that inappropriate in the in hearing vicinity, stuff like that, right? Yeah. I've seen that. I've never, maybe because I was suspiciously looking, I don't know, I never got to the anti-Jewish groups.
Right. And I'm sure there are out there, too.
But still, I mean, when you look at it again in general, there might be people with prejudices out there. There surely are. There always are and everywhere.
But they're always hiding.
But that's not a racism system, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not the same thing. So Jews do not really feel anymore, and it's a nice thing, for now at least.
For now, yeah.
In America, the pressure of anti-Semitism. Now, I agree with you, by the way, that this genie out of the bottle that some Republicans have released and is now eating their party, all parts of it, the reasonable part, the moderate part, the crazy, the racist, all of them. So many moderate Republicans have been tearing their hair out for years about this, warning that this is going to happen, this unleashing of religious fundamentalism and racism, because it's such a wonder, you know, it's the politician's crack, right?
Things
are effective. But in the long run, it will undermine the legitimacy of your party. To go back to the issue of Republicans have finally are coming apart at the seam, that has been warned by experts. Most of, you know, friends of the Republican Party, etc., have been warning about this for many, many, many years. And what can I say? Serve them right. It's up to the moderate Republicans to take back their party. You know? Shall we say. That's their job, and it's an important job for them to seek.
And strangely enough, they're not really out there. The ones that have been screaming are actually the typical conservatives like Lindsey Graham, who just completely disavow, you know, Trump.
Right.
But then again, the party itself is still saying, well, you know, if he's the top person, then we have to support him. And he's kind of like also on the fringe going like, well, you know, they don't treat me right, I'm going to jump out of the party, which
he's
I hope does happen. But, you know, somebody was making a comment, you know, I mean, one of the rotating heads at CNN, that he's just basically using all the stereotypes and every single insult that he can use to get more publicity. Because, and I heard this a long time ago, that any kind of publicity is better than none.
He does say, I mean, some
he's
of the things
exactly
might be...
not exactly making himself any friends.
Well, I don't know. I think you're underestimating how many people find that, if nothing else, you know, consider also this utter fakeness. You know, our political class doesn't represent us. Not at all. Zero representation.
But even
you know,
so,
the kings of France before the revolution represented their people.
But people aren't
going to
decide.
Probably, yeah.
Maybe more.
Maybe they'll subconsciously, like, feel all right about him. Like, oh, well, he may be, like, awfully racist and stuff, but I think some of his ideas are good.
You know,
but then some people, like, it's very difficult to consciously force yourself to vote for someone who wants to ban.
That's not his target.
But
when he said that, it lost him quite a few.
You know what? It goes back to the disease that we're having lately, politically incorrectness. Mm-hmm. Okay, where nobody wants to say what they are thinking or anything like that, and. You know, then you have the crowd, and I actually know people that during the Obama days, I was saying, he'd be a great president, but, you know, we're not ready for a black president. And, you know, they would say that among, you know, close friends, but they wouldn't say it out in the open.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what's happening is that these very same people see Trump out there saying all these crazy stuff, and they don't think it's that crazy because they themselves are thinking
again,
the same thing.
Understand me well.
And that's just
not
out of fear.
Crazy. It's just that he's saying it out loud, you see.
Right.
I'm always concerned. And again,
he's
vile
to me.
I would
crazy.
Not allow him into my house. And if he did, I would be forced to punch him out, right? Do not get me wrong. I find him to be,
But he is legitimately
revolting.
Crazy. You can't. No. If you say something like that, you are out of, well, you're not officially, but you. If he went into office, he can't do it. It's simply impossible.
Matter. Nobody cares what you can do. Look, again, to go back to something very
different.
He's
promising to do something
Obama
that cannot happen.
Obama promised a whole host of very important policies that indeed the majority of experts would agree, including myself, were absolutely what a moderate, capitalistic, you know, American president should do if his intentions are to improve the power and longevity of the nation
of
America.
But he didn't promise something that cannot happen.
But he didn't do a single solitary thing of everything he promised and got elected for.
Lie.
The argument is
like
whether
Trump says that he's going to ban all the Muslims from the United States. He
it's unconstitutional.
It's
you can't
promise.
Do that.
He cannot do it.
Hey, we had the same
thing.
We locked up all the Japanese in World War II.
That's true.
Yeah, but that was
same
not...
constitution. We exterminated 12 million
yeah,
Indians.
But,
same constitution.
That's
we
all race.
Millions of Africans.
This is
same
race, Baba. He's doing it based on religion.
Okay, well, you know, as the you know everything changes, but a little bit,
it's,
not
it's still
perfectly.
Protected. I mean, look at Waco.
I'm just saying he's not trying to win, essentially. If he does win, it's going to be on a strange kind of combo landslide. The system is rigged so that the establishment candidates who have been paid and purchased and receipts have been issued get into power. Therefore, Hillary Clinton is an establishment. So now she's talking like a raging socialist because that's what the people of America want to hear,
well,
at least on one side.
She's been watching Bernie.
Yeah.
So she's talking all this talk.
She's
it's
trying
like,
to... assimilate his
right
supporters.
But we all know she lies. It's her job, frankly. It's nothing personal,
but a lot of times, like, even
I've got nothing personal against
at school like the kids who are gonna be able to vote in the next election. I mean, nobody's actually listening to us because why would you? We generally don't vote, but a lot of people are talking about wanting to because this is a
should vote
important.
Local, by the way, just saying, just
yeah,
real
sure.
quick, local is actually
but
where your vote actually might matter.
But a lot of people are talking about actually voting for once because it seems like a pretty important election and everybody's like hyping it all the time, so we think oh well, we may as well take part. Probably more people than usual in my age group are going to vote, but not many people like Hillary because either they call her bipolar or they call her a socialist or whatever, but I haven't heard very many things that are good about
socialist.
Her. That's the super Republicans call her socialist. The
well, right, I know.
Democrats
yeah,
call her
yeah,
bipolar. Yeah. It's like, well, not bipolar, but like...
Well, both sides
floppy.
Pull out the boogeyman on each other, so...
And all that rhetoric... utterly irrelevant to real policy, real issues, or even to the
horse race.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing happening in the proverbial smoke-filled rooms is not about what we're gonna do. It's about how we're gonna dupe the public, and then it doesn't matter because the politicians are basically right. I'm losing the word. They're accountable to the same people, the proverbial 1%, or probably more like the 0.001%, the oligarchs, the very powerful, wealthy people.
Yeah.
And they own them both. So they're covered.
Yeah.
Right? There might be some different flavors. I'm not saying there's absolutely nothing, but the differences are very marginal, and it's made to be like that. So it's an entirely failed system, and we keep falling almost invariably, just like in George Orwell's 1984. We don't even have a language capable of dealing with the real issues. Our language kind of takes us right back to, okay, so who's more electable? Who's getting more grassroots activity? Who's getting more funding? I mean, we're back to that game.
And that's a part of a campaign, but it should never be like all of it, like what we're doing.
Well, campaigning is like marketing. If you notice, you get on an airplane and, you know, before you get on, you watch this commercial, they promise all this kind of stuff, and then when you get on, you just get a couple pretzels and good luck.
It's a good example, right? Because don't you love how the airliners always say, thank you. We know you have a choice. Thank you for choosing airline
right.
X.
XYZ,
really?
Right.
I had no choice. I mean, maybe if I'm a member of the 0 point, you know, and I'm no, only the 1%, right?
Private,
the 0 point, they have the private. No, the 1% probably just fly first class, you know? That's about the borderline there.
Poor people, you know?
Then you don't have a problem. See, then you take the shortest, most convenient route. I would know because I'm turning 50 soon and I've never had that option before. Of course, there were more options in the past. Right now, of course, with the hub system, there's absolutely no choice. So it's again a fake choice. And therefore I'm looking at Trump to go back. I mean, I'm looking at Trump as this kind of vile caricature. Think of it as a traditional puppet theater, right? So he's the monster. He's like the new, the monster guy that joined in to spice up the drama because people are beginning to be bored with that, two clones hitting on each other. Basically,
right.
They're doing the same thing, representing the same people, accountable to the same people, and therefore going to do exactly the same thing. We're tired of that. So we need the other game. The same reason why Bernie Sanders, with a very different characteristics than Donald Trump, I'll admit that I find him much more attractive, but I'm not iota in the game of, oh, if we can only get Bernie Sanders into power, it'll solve our problems. No, it'll
right.
have zero impact. And now I've alienated the few people who still like me, probably, right? No, he will not be elected.
The problem is
not going to happen.
If
one.
You're in the race,
can't
that's basically just a pledge to not change anything ever. Like, if you actually manage to get in there and to take part in the debates, it means that you've sold out.
But the third, but putting your foot in the door is almost impossible, right? Yeah. Since but Ross Perot tried to do it and almost pulled it off.
But then again, you know, there's nothing impossible except what mathematical improbabilities.
Yeah, but yeah. Okay, worst comes to worst, you gain just like in 2000.
Astronomical trends.
And if it gets dangerous, then we steal a few million votes. Yeah. Just like, again, to go back to, you know, let's spray it all around, right? The Republic, very consciously and criminally, some members, let's not put everybody together, of the Republican, you know, activists, not just party members, rigged long-term the election in 2000. They were more discreet in 2004, though there was clearly massive cheating there, too. And certainly there was a lot of cheating in 2008, too.
But it didn't work because...
Just Obama won so dramatic, historically, powerfully. So think of a nice. Let's be positive. A lot of Americans apparently
aren't that racist.
And you can add a couple of million extra that whose votes were you know torpedoed by Republican election commandos, as they did again in 2000, 2004, and 2008. They did it again. I don't know about 2012. And it sometimes takes time to find the mathematical anomalies.
Waste of time. Incumbents always win.
But anyway, you know, it doesn't. There's that, and it's so institutional with the delegate system and the party apparatus and the way that the funding is collected. It's designed so it's impossible to gain ground. So the smart moves that I will definitely every time I will perk my ears up would be when some kind of strange thing happens. If you know, Trump or Sanders drop out of their party, run independent, do something interesting, you know, my
well, pet.
Yeah, I wish they did.
I'd like to see Sanders and Ron Paul. That was my... Rand Paul, sorry, right? But I would like to see a ticket like that, a nonpartisan ticket of like, let's stop the corruption and the insanity. Mm-hmm. Let's just reset the system so that we have democracy, that we can elect the proper people. We can agree on that, libertarians, socialists, most Americans.
He was one of the very few, or actually probably the only candidate in the Republican debate that showed that he's got some brains.
Yeah. Well, you don't need brains to be a president.
But we would like to fantasize that they do have some kind of gray matter
fools
up there.
Careful.
They have advisors for that.
But strangely enough, talking about gray matter, Trump actually called out Bush and said that he's really dumb.
It's easy to call other people dumb.
Yeah. I think, I mean, again, I have admiration to George W. Bush.
He said Jeb Bush is dumb as rocks. I just had to give it to him. Yeah, Jeb Bush.
Mm-hmm. It's not the case.
No, he's supposed to be, academic?
In some sense, I suppose that Jeb Bush is kind of playing, they hoped to bring an establishment moderate, but not too moderate, popular, recognizable. He was the Clinton, if you will. I still think the funniest outcome, that's another thing that I will enjoy. If we have a campaign where it's Clinton II versus Bush III, I think that would be, I really like that. That's funny in a horrible, twisted sort of way.
Dynasty.
I wish they all would retire, get fresh names, fresh attitude, fresh ideas.
That will never happen.
No, we have
feed off of the souls of their electorate, so they'll never die.
If there's no accountability, why would there be?
For the last few decades, all I've been hearing is the same names over and over again, and nothing gets changed.
Well, the problem is that it's only the kids of politicians who go into politics.
You have to be pretty rich to start, and very well connected too.
And if you're rich and well connected, by now your family's already had fingers in a few pies.
Mm-hmm.
So,
of course.
I mean, Bernie Sanders actually is the poorest person on the house, basically.
Yep. Yeah.
Clinton used to be not very rich at all.
Right.
Of course, once you become president, of course, the opportunity of making a fortune. Again, Clintons are very rich by the vast majority of American standard. They're in the 0.001%, but they're not in the 0.00001%. The real masters of the universe. Those are
four of them.
Finance. There are the people who sit on board of directors and CEOs and CFOs of giant multinational corporations. And today, the industry is controlled by the finance, not by industry, actually. Sorry about the slip of words there. The economy is controlled by finance, probably more than ever before. That's one of the major problems we have, by the way, because finance...
Terrible idea.
Short-term finance, too. Short-term, 3 months horizon. So,
short-term finance is playing with imaginary money while a bomb ticks behind you.
Yeah.
Like,
And you're guaranteed to be saved. And in fact, you make even more money if you blow up the house.
Yeah. It's like Monopoly, yeah. But with TNT.
Yeah, it's like Monopoly with explosives and crack. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty awful.
Like, you landed on my hotel. Take like 3 lines of coke.
I mean, again, not that finance isn't important for the economy and can be a very productive and useful and even stabilizing force, but it depends on how you do it.
And it can't be so short-sighted. You have to be thinking of the future.
Like, that's right.
The country doesn't survive on a 3-month basis. No. No country's ever done that.
Oh, it could be okay when you're on the upswing, when everything's great and getting better.
Sure,
but
it's
once
not.
The first challenge hits, you're in trouble. That's one of the problems, by the way, of the mix in economics. It's a very fundamental problem in economics because, you see, it's not easy to be scientific in economics because it's extremely complicated and you can't just build the mathematical model. I mean, you can actually build mathematical models. The problem is that they're irrelevant for anything. So,
the more accurate you make them, the less they're useful because the more time it takes to use them and the faster they become obsolete.
So, you know, it's a difficult field to start with, but the problem is that it's kind of, it has a lot of impact, right? Mm-hmm. So getting the economy one way or another way could be a huge difference in the real world, right? Yeah. It typically often is. We'll take from some, give to others, you know, for example, at the very least. So, but it beckons people that have power to play the academic economics, right? It's extremely, it's so lucrative. If you can get the idea, the ludicrous, moronic idea of self-regulation, the thing that Alan Greenspan has been shoving down our throats, since the Clinton years, right? This, it's okay. We just deregulate some more. Alan Greenspan, former 2 times, right, chairman of the Fed. And back in the 90s, older listeners will remember he was the maestro. Everybody was, you know, celebrating at his altar. But the man is a complete idiot who was wrong about every single thing. I'm sorry, Alan, you know, nothing personal again.
But he orchestrated all that during the Reagan years. That's where all that deregulation started.
It started actually under Carter. Very significantly, with Paul Volcker.
Right, at the end of Carter, and then it got completely warped with Reagan.
Though Clinton actually accelerated. Clinton took the Reagan and turned it, you know, the Reagan move, which was a mistaken move, and I agree, no doubt. But Clinton, instead of reversing or changing course a little bit.
Right, he went with it, yeah,
of course. Mm-hmm. He accelerated very significantly. Much of the financial deregulation was before Bush even got to office. Not that he slowed anything down, on the contrary, but Clinton set him up beautifully for that. And, you know, hey, they're all good buddies, don't you know? They all hang out with the same bankers,
of course.
You know, they're all good buddies.
They all drink the same champagne.
Yeah. Again, the problem with economics then that we, with the field, if we attempt to be reasonable about what we understand about the economy, and we understand a lot of things, but the interests are so huge that even your academic career is significantly improved, if you choose a particular ideological position as somebody who claims to be a scientist. So it's medieval. In other words, it's medieval science. It's pre-modernity. It's more damage than good,
like,
because of that.
As speaking from a position where I very much like science and follow the news on that, if you say that I'm trying to prove this, you can't be a scientist.
Right.
Scientists cannot try to prove things. They simply do the experiments that are designed to simulate whatever things you're trying to do. And then whatever the result is. You can't try to prove that global warming is false, because if you start from that point of view, then the bias is enormous and you end up with the wrong results.
But that's a great example, actually, because when it comes to environmental science, there is an issue, actually. There is, unlike most sciences, where the ideologies are neutral. You see, I mean, there's no ideological divide of what kind of string theory.
Yeah.
Is it 11 or 9 dimensions, you know? Nobody cares from other than scientists.
And nobody want to ask Ted Cruz that.
Nobody's paying them immense amounts of money to decide one way or the other.
Right. But finding somebody who is willing to question catastrophic climate change in our near future, or actually ongoing, is very lucrative.
And in some cases, like, I don't remember his name, but there was a scientist who was, like very conservative, like, focused on not necessarily proving that they had the right idea, but just sort of he thought that there was no climate change, that it's just a cycle and it's not caused by man and stuff like that. And so he was hired by, was it the Koch brothers, I think, to like run a huge, very rich, like huge experiment. The most money the Koch brothers have donated in a single sitting went to him to prove that climate change doesn't happen. And he proved that it very much does happen, and we absolutely cause it. And he did it with their money. And when they like tried to sue him, I think it was it him. Yeah, that might have been somebody else. But like they tried to sue one of the people that they paid to do that, and you can't because they've proved it. They used your money to prove a fact.
But they don't care because most of these people don't live in Beijing, which, by the way, already had a second alert for smog.
It's not just Shanghai anymore.
Right.
No, that's good news, essentially, in the sense that the Chinese will kind of have to.
Right.
Yeah.
They have no other choice.
Denial is getting difficult.
Yeah. Exactly. You can't, put together oxygen for the whole population.
It was pretty bad in America, by the way. You know, one of my favorite movies of all times, Blade Runner, kind of takes L.A., right?
Into right.
Today, essentially, right? And it's all dark and constant rain and smog and acid rain and all that stuff.
If they had constant rain, it would be very helpful.
No, you're too young. You don't remember. L.A. was getting there in the 70s. It is the last liberal president of the United States. Yeah. Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
Who did that? That was when the Clean Air and Clean Water Act came in, So the air pollution in L.A. is nothing like what it used to be in the 70s, just to show that, it doesn't take much of an effort, really, to fix our problems. It's just a matter of...
I got a Star Wars spoiler.
No.
Yes, no. I have to say it.
I'm not even that excited.
No, you can't.
I'll watch it.
Harrison Ford is old.
Oh, yeah, well, you didn't need that. There's the trailer.
Old as the hills, no? You should play Tom Bombadil in The Hobbit number 15. Yeah.
People are getting so wrapped up in it and so unwind because people out there have been giving out, hints of what's going on. But it's already out. I mean, how do you feel about that?
That he's old?
No. Well, that too. No, the fact that, there's people out there saying, oh, this happened and,
Oh, well, they're scum.
what?
People who give spoilers should be burnt at the stake, I think.
Oh.
Except, like, you have to wait like a couple of months before you can start saying anything. At that point, it's their fault. But, like, while it's 2 days since, one day since the release, that's.
Just for sport, yeah, that's pretty nasty. I mean,
that's why I've not been on the internet at all.
I'm actually not that excited. I mean, I loved Star Wars back in the day. I don't hate the prequels even.
I never got into Star Wars. I never did. I was more of a Blade Runner than a Star Wars.
Yeah, it was a bit of a, but.
We were always more Star Trek family.
And Star Trek, yeah, Star Trek actually above all.
Then we had a period of Star Wars, and it's still cool.
Star Wars was wonderful.
And we'll watch it, in the cinema. Yeah, we'll watch it. Yeah.
And, I mean, I think, that all the hate and stuff for the prequels was very much driven by, the fanboys who were like, oh, it's impure and stuff. Well, sure, yeah, it was made to sell toys. And yes, it was mostly made for, nostalgia and for, cameos and stuff. But they weren't bad.
No.
Like, they were directed,
And the upside also, it's J.J. Abrams might thus not stop. Leave Star Trek alone, maybe?
That'd be hopeful.
That'd be good.
Okay.
Because that's
I'm not angry either,
but it's just the new Star Treks are not Suck. Star Treks. They're something else.
Right.
They're not even anything. They're like bad sci-fi. I mean, once you take out the philosophy and like the deep thought and stuff like that from Star Trek, it just turns into crappy sci-fi.
It's the Republican version of Star Trek. Don't you know?
Well, I mean, I feel like they enjoy good movies, too, The two new Star Treks are just bad. They're bad.
The one thing I resent Jesse for is, forcing me to defend them.
What, Captain Picard, Captain Scoobin from Love Boat? I mean,
Picard
please.
Rocked. What?
Please.
Picard rocked.
Picard is not of a...
They're all good. I mean, everything. I even I'm so open-minded.
I liked it more than the original.
He was so boring.
I even like Deep Space Nine.
Character. No real character. I mean, at least Shatner, as bad of an actor that he was.
Original,
I mean, he was amusing.
The problem for me...
He's the reason why I wanted to be an astronaut.
Really?
Yeah.
The problem for me with the original series is I was not raised on it at all. There's no nostalgia for me there. It's not great, in my opinion. It's, very much monster of the week thing. Like, they randomly come across, like, some giant space amoeba, and then Spock starts, like, getting horny, and, like, everyone starts wanting to screw... Is that... Yeah, that, you're not allowed to say that? To... When is it not dumped anymore?
You never know.
Is this good now?
It's just a delay.
Right? Yeah, it's just a delay.
Sorry, when everyone wants to engage in sexual relations with Kirk, then it's like, it's very boring. Like,
they never do, though.
No,
but they broke a lot of ground in the original Star Trek.
They forced the network to air the first interracial kiss.
Oh, with Uhura, yeah.
Which on multiple levels. I mean, it was, I thought it was a little naive in some sense, and I do think actually the next generation, with some hiccups in the initial, they had hiccups, but they stayed 7 seasons at the time. It was something. I mean, today it's not that weird anymore, these massive seasons, but back then it broke all records, right?
Right.
It was by far more successful than it's science fiction. People today, science fiction's gone so mainstream. People don't realize that. It wasn't at all. It was impossible. No, only B movies. Only, second and third rate.
And most people who were into it were lunatics. Yeah. Or viewed, by society as kind of like, oh, well, you're delusional or whatever. That could never happen.
But back to Star Wars.
That's good stuff.
For all the fans who may be listening and who, like, may be hating us for not terribly hating the prequels, I have a piece of news for you. Lucas intended originally to have Jar Jar Binks have a pet, which would follow him in every scene he was in. A pet which acted like him, but worse. So be thankful that you only had Jar Jar Binks.
So in other
it
words...
It could have been worse.
So the intention was basically to put some Gongasola cheese on top of Vermont cheddar, huh?
Yeah. Well, it was more the intent to, like...
I don't know.
I mean, it was supposed to be for, like, comedy's sake, and these days, if the movie had come out more recently, it would have definitely happened, because just look at Minions. Minions was Jar Jar Binks, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Starring Jar Jar Binks
Missed that. I mean, listen, there's a lot. I mean, people complain about the Ewoks back in the old days.
The Ewoks? Like, seriously.
I don't understand that. There was hate for that,
but
too.
Like,
I mean,
no,
it's a cute
we
bear.
Were
What's
it.
The problem? It's not like a serious thing. It's Star Wars.
They're not cute. They're horrifying. You think, like, oh, they're little teddy bears. But rewatch this, the third chronologically sixth in order movie. They're not cute. They're, like, furry little monsters with, like, weird wrinkled faces
and
large out teeth, and they're not cute at all.
You thought they were cute when you were, like, 6 or whatever.
Yeah, because fluffy things are cute when you're 6. But looking at them again without, like, the haze of childhood, they're pretty terrifying.
I think their cannibalism only adds to their charm.
They're not cannibals. They don't eat actually, do they eat other Ewoks?
Let them loose in the White House.
They eat people. I mean, people keep forgetting they do eat people when they can have the opportunity.
Hey, don't we all? If you're hungry enough,
True.
I mean, honestly, if it's cooked enough, eating people is perfectly fine.
I don't know. If you're stranded in a mountain with, bad weather.
Yeah.
You may
boil
not
it
have
well
patches.
First, right? Grill it well.
I don't
remove
know
all nerve matter,
You don't need to remove it so long as it's well cooked enough. Just like, probably like not medium well, I wouldn't risk it, but like well cooked, crispy. Do something about the skin, maybe. Then
and especially fava beans and a nice Chianti, right?
Right, exactly.
Hannibal Lecter
reference. No, but thinking about it, like the sides, like underneath the arms and like the back and stuff, it wouldn't be terrible.
Child, obviously I don't give him enough meat. Short on protein, obviously.
Yeah, and talking about crazy stuff like that, I watched this other shooting this week. This officer literally I personally think that at this point they're just getting out of hand because they're just randomly shooting people. It doesn't matter, who it is or what it is or, whether they're aliens or not, they just want to shoot.
Aliens?
There was this report coming out of California. I guess this sheriff was in pursuit of this car that was kind of,
swerving.
Wavering all over the place. Yeah, swerving. And it finally crashed. And so he gets out, and it's all on the cam. And, he's approaching it. And apparently the person that was driving, the car was kind of like flipped over. Mm-hmm. So the guy's coming out, And the way it flipped over is kind of like on its side. Mm. So he was able to come out through the passenger window.
Yeah.
So he's coming out. He's got both hands on the car. And the sheriff pulls out his gun and just shoots him right there. And, you know, what's really horrifying is that he just basically walks to the car. I mean, in situations like that, most of the time, they're kind of like wondering if there's somebody else in there to take another second shot. Yeah. But it seems like he just knew that that was it and just shot the guy. Goes over there and for 11 minutes, he didn't call rescue or anything like that. There was another person inside, the wife of the guy who was dying from the actually a car crash.
She died?
Oh yeah, she passed away a few hours later.
Wonderful.
You can tell clearly on the video.
He'll get a paid vacation for a while.
And this was a white guy.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it happens
too.
Sure,
it was an accident.
But it really points out, at the fact that a lot of these police departments are not training their police force appropriately.
Yeah. And they're hiring crazy.
You know,
and then you have, then
you combine the racist element and the ignorant folk out there that also want to become, police enforcers and they don't know how to do it. I mean. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's really getting out of hand.
I feel like we need like an impartial third party to like vet all people who are just going to be given a gun and free reign to shoot people.
Yeah, like, but there's no such thing as an impartial third party. That's one of the biggest problems in political science. There isn't one.
Right, yeah.
So what are you going to do, right? You have to have people accountable. You have to have processes that work better. And again, school shootings, the political rhetoric, police brutality, rape culture, you know, this epidemic of sexual assault everywhere, all of that stuff. I mean, is it connected? Yes, it is. It's part of the, you don't need to beep me because I'm experienced. I like my son, like, get us into trouble. Good. It's all part of the societal collapse. It's all part of things breaking at the seams, and the sooner we realize and deal with it and just look at it openly and not necessarily in the Trumpian way, you know, we should be saying like, yes, it's under there. This PC only covers the problems. We have to open it up. We have to exactly understand, go through that painful process. It's not going to get better. It's going to get worse.
Yeah.
It's very unfortunate.
I wish that the Illuminati would just get their act together and like, make a new world order, because at this point our current one is not working very well.
Aliens, right? We're always wishing for aliens to come and, you know, and nothing else, it'll unify us, right?
Right, right. Yeah.
Except that then we'd be even more xenophobic.
All of a sudden we'll realize that we're one race, really, and we'll all together hate the aliens.
Yeah. Well, people will find an excuse to, keep warring and stuff. I mean,
yeah, generally.
Except, Papa, the problem is that the aliens would come, we'd unify, start hating them, and then they'd quarantine us because they're afraid we'll get out.
They might.
Just do not leave your planet. You
are
the racist
monkeys. Or they'd be even worse than us, you know?
Yeah.
But the joke, I mean, you know, just aside, of course, but I mean, the idea that to be aware of just how we're in this together and things, just like in many ways the environmental movement was supposed to have launched with the picture of Earth, right? The complete Earth from space and the first Apollo that left orbit, and it was kind of a big wake-up moment, and, you know, 50 years later.
Yeah, we're still.
Well, it's because we haven't left the orbit since, you know?
And it's part of it that we're all focused on instead of creating new value, we're fighting over the pre-existing
resources. Even
right now, our atmosphere looks like a junkyard.
Yeah.
Of all the satellites that we have
up
there.
The worst part is that that's actually incredibly dangerous. Some, people who are working on this at NASA and stuff like that say that Kessler syndrome is just around the corner. And that's the fact that if, like, a defunct satellite crashes into another satellite, like, thousands of teeny tiny little, like, sharp particles of metal and glass and who knows what will spread out and break more satellites, will create more stuff, and then we won't be able to leave Earth's orbit for probably a couple hundred years. And by then we'll probably all be dead from nuking each other. Because if we can't leave, we'll just murder each other into dust.
Yeah, leaving is not exactly on the table anytime
soon. Not leaving, but like opening, looking at our own navels, you know? We have a whole solar system here.
Yeah, it's like rats in a box.
I wish we were just looking, we're performing
seppuku on a regular basis. You know? Just looked at her tummy. Never mind. That wouldn't be too bad. Yeah. Stick a knife in it, or that's the problem. But hey. Right. So yeah. Well, that took us a long way around, didn't we? I
mean, yeah.
Where did we even start? What were we even saying?
We started off with Trump.
Wanted to mention.
I will.
We have like 8 minutes.
Yeah. Let's just do it. I'm going to come back about this definitely. So it's not the last time, but I can make it at least somewhat official. So Charlotte, who plays it still shows as Punkonomics on the internet, but who plays French eclectic French music, a French Disconnection on Saturdays,
right.
Where we Wednesdays. 2 to 4 when we used to be, and who happens to be my wife and me, and we have some common interests, and we've even published together, despite her being in French fairy tale folklore, so she's a fairy tale expert, me being an economist of sorts. So, we are actually co-presidents of this Humanities Association. Long story short, we're organizing what promises to be an amazing conference at Rollins in June, early June, actually, 1 to 3. Like I said, I'll send more information. We'll go slowly like that, right? By teaser a little bit. So that's when it's going to happen. Now, it's an academic conference. It's titled, actually, Creation, Recreation, and Entertainment. Early modernity and postmodernity. It's an annual conference of it's going to be held at Rollins College, our radio, the radio. Yeah, everybody right. Listening to this radio probably knows what we are, and it's going to be really cool. It's going to be very much symbolic, I think, of exactly who we are. The notion of interdisciplinary, even transdisciplinary. For those who don't know, that means that you don't just mix, let's say, economics and literature and political science, but you actually blend them so they're no longer pure. They're a new thing. Yeah. Teaching broadly like that from multiple perspectives and multiple disciplines. And researching like that too. And the notion that you do not really understand the economics of Antwerpen in the 17th century if you don't understand the culture, the literature, yet the poetry, the music, everything, the art. You have to kind of look at phenomenon, in all their details and not just one angle, or you get to that old joke, right? With the blind mouth. No, what is it? The blind person describing an elephant.
Oh, yeah.
Touching the leg and seeing a trunk. Touching the tail and seeing a string.
Right.
Nobody's coming close to describing anything resembling an elephant. So you have to kind of look from all perspectives at the same time to do it right. And it's going to be the 46th annual Congress of the North American Society for 17th Century French Literature. So, you know, specialized. It's probably the biggest one in America. Some French scholars might have a problem, but some of them, you know, scholars just like people. We have our factions and, you know, old vendettas and what have you, right? But anyway, where we're really organizing something that's going beyond the more traditional academic conference where we present papers and discuss them and criticize them and do things like that. Then we obviously like to party in conferences, so we have banquets and we have dinners and we have panels, etc. But we're really going to engage the community this time around. So we're going to have local art institutions, which we're still working with them, so we're not sure, and we will be seeking some further assistance financially to organize it, and looking for opportunities to allow maybe local business to give us some food and in exchange be, you know, officially recognized as sponsors and co-connect with local other entertainment. We're looking at several quite exciting entertainment, shall we say, institutions to stay not committed yet, to make this a great big party and to have public events, events for the college and its community, events for Winter Park, Central Florida and its community at multiple levels. So I wanted to kind of throw it out there. If anybody thinks it's fascinating and wants more details, I will post regularly information on punkonomics.org. And yes, I am behind, but I'm catching, and I know it's all Jesse's fault. He's been sending me files. It's my fault. Mea culpa. I've been extremely busy, and when I was done busy with my day job, I spent the last, 2 days, I suppose?
In the wasteland.
Bostonian wastelands. Fighting.
He's so bad at that game.
He always says that, but
you cannot function without me there to tell you what to do.
No, I like
every
to
situation.
Ask you your advice. You know?
All right, so Anyway,
Right, exciting thing. I will share it. I hope maybe, you know, there's the radio show could also, where we can combine things in unusual ways.
Hopefully we can do that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So Pagonomics.org for more information. And next week, I believe we have another 1 hour.
Believe
we'll be there unless we aren't.
Oh, okay. All right, folks. So join us again next week here at WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, 1 o'clock for Punkonomics, your weekly discussion show.
Yeah.
Only on WPRK.
Indeed.
Views and opinions expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WPRK, its management, or employees of Rollins College.